Then tell me, Alistair is your support worker, and how does he support you in your employment?
He is really good at knowing connections to people, getting me to work places all across Adelaide, and he's been my PA and PR.
Wow, so he handles all the media inquiries, doesn't he? Although
Yeah.
he did with me. I had to go through Alistair to get to you then. Hi, I'm Dr. George Stolfoss, and welcome to Reasonable and Necessary, a steady spirit podcast series on everything you ever wanted to know about the National Disability Insurance Scheme, brought to you by the Song Foundation. But before we go any further, please do me a favor and hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and select the notification bell so you can be notified of future episodes. On today's episode, we're joined by Donna Purcell and Jenny Hodges from the NDIA and NDIA participant Ben Payer to talk about how you can use your NDIA funding to find and maintain employment. We will also look at what employers can do to get more disabled people into meaningful work. Check it out. Hi, Donna and Jenny. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Hi, George. Thanks.
Now, how about we start by introducing ourselves? Donna, can I start with you?
Sure. So I'm Donna Purcell. I'm the participant advocate at the NDIA. And I have also just returned from doing a Churchill Fellowship where my topic was on employment. So I'm really excited to be having this discussion with you today. Also, I'd just like to let our listeners know that I am a person who is legally blind.
All right, welcome, Donna. Jenny.
Yes, thanks, George. Yeah, George, I've been in the NDIS since 2013 at the Barwon trial site, and before that also worked in disability employment for CRS Australia. So I have a long history in disability employment and an absolute passion in trying to do what I can to make a difference. I was involved in the school leaver employment support rollout within the agency, and at the moment I'm a director in the employment outcomes branch. And my main job at the moment is a refresh of our participant employment strategy.
Awesome. I love the idea of a new, refreshed strategy. Nothing makes me more excited than that, and I think we're going to talk a bit about that shortly. How about we start by getting into how the NDIS can support people to find and maintain employment? So, Jenny, help us understand a bit about that.
Yeah, okay. There's essentially sort of three different types of support, main ways that the NDIS can support people with getting into employment. One of the first ways, of course, is by having good planning conversations and good resources for participants to understand what we can do and how we can support you. So we've got to get information out there. In terms of what the NDIS can practically do in a person's plan, there are a couple of different types of employment support, and George, shall I just run through them briefly?
Sure, I'd love to hear about them.
Good, great, okay. So the main ones, if we break them apart, the main one is what we call a capacity building support, and if people have got this in their plans, it's under what we call finding and keeping a job. So think about these supports as supports for growth and learning. So they're typically sort of time limited. They might go for a couple of years within a person's plan, and it's all about growing skills, about growing confidence, about learning about what work means for you. It could be doing things like having good, great work experience. It also can be things like travel training and learning how to manage money and working along in a team. It can also be when you're at a job and there's some challenging situations, or you want to change your job, or focus on career development. So that growth and learning, think about that. The other type of support is what we call school leaver employment supports, which is part of that. So that's specifically for young people as they move from school to work. There's one other support in there that people might have seen, and it's called employment-related assessment and counselling. It's not used a lot in the scheme, but it's a really important support. So imagine someone who might need to find a new pathway to work. So someone, for example, like a builder who received an acquired brain injury through an accident. They really need help to understand what they can still do, what they would find challenging to do now, what needs to be changed or be different. So need some really good skills in the sort of assessment and counselling to sort of adjust to the changes in the person's working life. The other main sort of support, so we've got the growth supports, and then the other main supports is what we call the on-the-job support. We call them supports in employment. These are the day-to-day supports the NDIS can help with when you're at work. So when you've got a job and you still need a bit of help day-to-day, the NDIS can support you with that. So they're the main types of things that are direct employment supports, George.
Right. Now, earlier in the week, I spoke with Ben and Alistair about how Ben uses his NDIS funding to find and maintain work. Let's take a listen. Hey, Alistair and Ben. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Hey, George.
Ben, can I start with you? Can you tell us a bit about yourself?
I live with two disabilities, Down syndrome and autism. I own three businesses, and I am in two NDIS reference groups.
Oh, excellent. Well, tell us about your businesses. What do you do?
I do apparel, which is what you're looking at the moment. This one, be nice.
Ah, cool.
And also we have a cap and a mug.
Cool. And do you sell these online, or how does, it work?
Yes, we are.
And how did you decide to start your own business?
It started with a retail store that I went to work there.
Ah, excellent. How long did you work there for?
4 years.
Awesome. And how did you end up with that job?
My mom had some connections with a couple recently with someone with a disability as a child. And someone was about to get a job, but fortunately could not, so they gave it to me.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Ben. And what other work do you do?
I also am in two NDIS reference groups. I'm in the Precipitant Reference Group, PRG, and also I did the Home and Living Policy too.
Awesome, Ben. I was thinking, I asked you, how do you support Ben, and how does the NDIS support them to find employment and work?
George, it's a good question. I think, fundamentally, we've got to acknowledge that the NDIS supports Ben through the finances that are accessible through his plan. They're really important to providing Ben with the means for designing his life. And choosing the people and the RTOs that he wants to work with that suit his sort of passions and drives and that he thinks he'll get the best outcome from working with. And I think what we're seeing from this experience is we're looking at forward planning so that it's inclusive from the start, not retrospective. And that's a really, I'd like to, compliment the NDIS for the change that we're seeing there. So it's, making inclusive by design, and that's within the industry, outside, but also within the NDIS.
And then tell me, Alistair is your support worker, and how does he support you in your employment and in your work? What does he do for you?
He's very reliable. He is really good at knowing connections to people, getting me to places all across Adelaide. And he's been my PA and PR
So together we've worked to make appointments, plan meetings, looking for work, negotiating with RTOs around DES support. We've also worked together to find employment within, you know, the NDIS and with research groups. So, yeah, I'm kind of a PA. You said that, didn't you? A PA and...
And also a PR,
yeah,
public relations.
Wow, so he handles all the media inquiries, does he? Although yeah. He did with me. I had to go through Alistair to get to you, Ben. What advice would you give other NDIS participants who want to work?
If I was you guys, anywhere else, people with disability, and it does not matter, what I'm saying is that do not go with the disability, be the disability and how it works. Work on the disadvantages. That is what you need to do. Be more passionate.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon the way that I've seen Ben work is that he uses everything as a strength. So
the disadvantages are a strength that you use. Like, I have autism and I work through that because managing autism is like managing a business.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about my disability. Any other advice, guys?
Yeah, I reckon if you're looking for work, go for it. But dare to dream about what you really want to do. You know, like get to know yourself and what really sparks you, and then go for it. Like it's available to you. Really go for it and trust that, you know, if you want to be employed by somebody, then yes, you can do that. And the NDIS can support you to do that.
And you can use your NDIS support to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, people, connections, yeah.
Fantastic. Great outcomes, guys. Thanks for chatting to us today.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be with you, George, and got to say it's a pleasure being here with Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Alistair. Very beautiful. Getting to know you, George.
Oh, you too, Ben.
Thanks.
See you later. Bye.
See you, George.
Wow, that was pretty awesome, wasn't it? What are your reflections on what Ben and Alistair had to say, Donna?
George, for me, the thing I really liked was the advice around dare to dream. That really resonated with me. I think for anyone looking for work, it's always good to have that dream of a job that you know will be your ultimate job, and it doesn't need to be a senior role. If you are starting out, thinking about where you want to be and have that dream, but you might need to take a few steps and take other jobs along the way to get there. And I think also just how important, if you need a support person with you, to plan for that, because I think there's obviously a great relationship between Ben and Alistair and where that support is really important, but it also enables Ben to do so much more. And I think lastly, just thinking about self-employment, I mean, Ben's obviously been really successful, because he's set up his own business and that self-employment has really worked for him.
Yeah, and I loved how Ben, I totally agree with what Ben said when he said that follow your passion and do what you're passionate about. Any reflections from you, Jamie?
Yeah, I agree with what you've both said. I think the other thing that struck me was how well Ben and Alistair used networks. So we know that having good networks in the community and within your own family and everything is really important in employment. It's still the case, with or without disability, most people get their jobs through someone they know or their networks. And so I really like the way that Ben and Alistair used and expanded their networks to make connections out with sort of new employers and new people, and expanded the choice. And it highlighted for me too the fact that, you know, the NDIS is fantastic, but it doesn't work as a silo. You know, other things have to happen as well as the support an NDIS plan can give someone to do that. The other thing I think is, I think there was a term, inclusive by design, and I really love the way they use that in terms of customised employment. So, you know, it's about being really intentional in terms of the way that they were thinking about work and customising it and making it as inclusive as they could, that you know, drew on Ben's talents. And I think that was a really important aspect of it as well.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to talk a bit about customised employment later. I know that Donna has a lot of knowledge around that in her research. One thing that I find it hard to get my head around, and I think that other people do, and there's a lot of different government programs in the employment space. Mm. Can you help us with that, Jenny?
Yeah, I can. Look, this is something we still hear that is quite confusing, and I absolutely understand why. So the main things that we bump up against, George, in the NDIS, or I should say people bump up against, is what is the Disability Employment Services Program, or DES, and the Employment Assistance Fund, or EAF. They're both accessed through Job Access, which is got a lot of different resources on it as well. So essentially, if we think about the DES, that's a program that's specifically designed to help people with disability get a job. And there would certainly be some NDIS participants that would be eligible to enter that program. It does have eligibility criteria. Not all participants will meet that criteria, but some certainly would. Now, whether someone has employment supports in their plan or not doesn't affect your eligibility for DES. Like, it doesn't affect it. And so it's not about if you have the NDIS, you can't have DES, and if you have DES, you can't have the NDIS. There's not a rule around that. But what does have to be considered during planning conversations is what's the right sort of support that you need now and into the future that's going to help you achieve your goal. So sometimes it is a focus on NDIS supports, you know, the ones that I spoke about before. And a lot of the supports the NDIS can do are really that capacity building, that really intense, frequent, goal-oriented supports that help someone particularly get ready for work. So a lot of that sort of confidence building, building your skills, those foundation skills that you need to be able to successfully start looking for work with an employer. You know, really understand your interests, understand what you're good at, get your possible job options up there, know what an employer expects of you, be able to travel independently, all those sorts of things. The NDIS has a really key role in that. When someone is at a point where they're able to work, they're really on that pathway, they're starting to work with employers, DES could have a role in that as well, of course. So DES has great networks nationally, they work with employers, and a good DES will do a lot of work with an NDIS participant to do what we talked about, mentioned before, customised. So they'll work with you to find the right skill sets and to match them with the right job with an employer. Unfortunately, not all DES do that, but a lot do. And so, an NDIS participant certainly should think about a DES program and if it might be right for them and when it's right for them. And their provider or their LAC or their planner can help with some of that discussion around, well, what's the right pathway for you right now? But I think the main thing I want to talk about is that, you know, it's not an either or. It can be both. It needs to be complementary, not the same, not duplicating services. But it could certainly can happen. The Employment Assistance Fund is quite a discrete fund that's available for people who've got a job and they need workplace modifications or equipment. So obviously the NDIS funds things that are for whole of life. You know, if someone needs some mobility aids, then the NDIS will fund them, of course, for their work life and their home life. But there might be specific things that are needed at work, for example, speech recognition software and so on. The EAF can fund that. And again, a good provider will point both the person and the employer in the right direction to know how to apply for those things.
But I have real life experience of this stuff, and it got really confusing in the sense that the NDIS said that the thing on my wheelchair that controlled my mouse had to be funded by my employer. I said to them, I don't just use this at work, I use it at home. And clearly our disabilities with us, whether we're at home or at work, and I use voice software at home to talk to my friends online, and I also use it at work. So, it's not like where you can divide us up into the work person and the non-work person.
And that's right. And it's a pretty complicated space too. And when we think about the number of staff and LACs who are doing planning, it's hard to expect all of them to know all the intricate details of all of these. And that's why we need some extra additional information. We want people to publish information where people, it's much more easy to access information around what can I expect from the NDIS in terms of work equipment and so on, and what should I expect under this other employment assistance fund. And we need that for participants, we need it for our own staff, and we're certainly working on that. And yes, George, it can be complicated if you use equipment both at home and at work. It's not clear cut. I would certainly encourage people to ask the question of their LAC or planner, and you know, as I said, look up information in Job Access. It's quite easy to find the Employment Assistance Fund, and there's a hotline in Job Access that participants can also get information about what they can get through the Employment Assistance Fund. And I hope that people aren't caught in the middle of it. Sometimes they are. It sounds like you have been, George, too. So ultimately, we don't want that to happen, and we've got to make it clear both to our staff and participants about what they can expect and what we should be doing. We're part of the strategy, George. One of the pillars is better planning, better consistent planning, better informed planning. So that's the sort of thing we're working with.
And then I understand that there is a pilot around employment pathways. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, George, I should have mentioned that when I was talking before about some of the things that NDIS participants can sort of bump up against. The Pathways Pilot is something that is being led by Department of Social Services, but we're working with them very closely on this. What it's about is recognising that, as you just said, it can be really confusing to understand how the NDIS supports and how DES supports might work together, or in fact how NDIS participants, with or without NDIS supports, can make use of a DES program. And so what this pilot is about is in certain locations we'll have DES providers, and we'll have NDIS participants who volunteer to be part of this, to say, yeah, look, I really want to be part of something that will help make it much clearer around how DES can support me and NDIS participants to get a job. And so what we'll do is that we'll work very closely with the providers and with the participants through our LACs and our planners, and facilitate the connection to a DES service. As I said, that person may have NDIS supports in their plan as well. So part of the pilot is saying, okay, well, how can these supports from a DES work with the NDIS supports together to make sure that the person gets all the help and supports that they need, and there aren't any gaps? So we're going to learn a lot from this pathway pilot, and as it says, the pathway, testing the pathways for NDIS participants to be able to make the best use of other government supports that are available. As I said, it's entirely voluntary, but we will be hopefully in the next half of the year start reaching out to people in those selected areas to see if they're interested. So it would be great if any of our listeners wanted to be part of that.
Donna, can I turn to you? We know from the statistics that only 23% of NDIS participants who are of working age are in paid employment. What's going on here? It's not a great statistic, is it?
No, George, it's not a great statistic. And unfortunately, you know, sort of, I guess, for our community and more broadly, it's not a great statistic either, where that unemployment or underemployment is sitting at about 53%. So, and I certainly think that there's a lot that can be done to fix that. I know a lot of our participants have employment in their plans, but for those who don't, who do want to work, and certainly that's something, you know, I encourage people to think about when they are doing their next plan, to look at perhaps putting some more formal supports in there to help on that journey. I think the other thing is employers themselves have a role to play as well, and I think often employers, you know, think about people with disability and think about trying to fit people into standard job roles. I think if employers could think outside of the square a little bit, and rather than think, well, we've got this list of jobs, you know, and that's not going to work, you know, or we don't have jobs suited for people with disability, I'd like to encourage people to take a step back and think about job customization. And what that means is really tailoring jobs to fit around skill gaps within a workplace, but where that is then matched with someone with disability who has some skills and areas of work that they'd like to do, and pulling that all together. And it can be really simple. There's some organisations, you know, that are doing this well in Australia, but it was something that a lot of organisations were doing when I visited New York in particular for my Churchill Fellowship. A lot of the support organisations were really specialising in this and having huge success. And how it works, just some of the main steps are firstly finding an employer who is willing to customise a job or tailor a job for a person. And that is often by an employer just looking at all of the things that they need done but nobody does, because there's always those things in all of our jobs, that the things that we just don't get around to doing or don't like doing, and that we keep sort of pushing to the back to, like, I'll do that tomorrow. And so there's a whole lot of tasks, you know, that fit into that, you know, I don't have time to do basket, that may be things that a person with disability could do. And then it's about going on what is called a discovery journey with a person with disability. And it's looking at all the things that they can do and the things that they like to do. And then hopefully there's a match between what employers have to offer and what that skill set and the likes to do are for that person with disability, and bringing that all together and designing a job that's going to both fit the needs of the organisation and fit the needs of the person with disability. And I know I've simplified it, you know, but essentially, you know, that's how it all works. And there have been some really successful, you know, opportunities, some really great jobs come out of that approach.
Yeah, Donna, that sounds great. Is the NDIA going to be doing this?
George, not at the moment, but it's a great idea. So, yeah, maybe I need to do some influencing.
Absolutely. I hope so. Now, you did spend a lot of time overseas looking at how to improve the employment outcomes. We're very low in Australia in the number of people with disabilities in employment. I'm interested in from you, apart from customised employment, what else do we need to see change?
Yeah, look, I did meet with a lot of organisations in a number of countries. So I did visit the US, UK, Switzerland and France, and I met with 22 organisations all up during my travel. And from that, George, there were three key themes that I think kept coming up, with almost every organisation that I met with, where I guess that success was being had. The first one was around leadership and really just having a senior leader who was championing change, really championing that employment of people with disability within an organisation. Often that person, was a senior person themselves in several organisations. It was the CEO, and they mightn't have had a disability themselves, but there were several CEOs that had children with a disability. And so that was the motivation behind, and so that was what was leading a lot of the change. The second was really around that commitment to being an inclusive employer. And that had a whole range of things involved in it. So it was about having that commitment to diversity and inclusion. Sometimes it was where there was a commitment to having aspirational targets around employing people with disability. It was making sure that things like recruitment practices were accessible so that there were no barriers when it came to applying for roles. And the third area was around measurement and targets. So, having a commitment is one thing, but I guess that third piece around being able to track and measure that change, to track how many people are coming into your organisation, making sure that you're not just employing people, but you're supporting them and maintaining them, and not just in the jobs that they come into, but also that career development and tracking that as well. And the only way you know you're doing that well and that your commitment and your programs are working is to be able to measure and track that.
Yeah, I just think there are so many win-win opportunities here for employers and people with disabilities. And, I think that COVID and what's happened around people working from home, and I think that it's opened a lot of doors, and it's shone a light on how important. Sorry, Donna, the light's gone off again. Did you see that? I said it shone a light, and then Donna's light went off. It shone a light on how flexible workplaces can give great outcomes for everyone, and not just people with disabilities. I want to go back to the NDIS initiatives and ask Jeannie about the particular importance on supporting young people into jobs. And the NDIS has specific initiatives in that area, don't you, Jeannie?
Yes, George, that's right. We have a support called School Leaver Employment Supports, which is focused on young people and helping them make that move from, particularly from school to work. We're doing okay in terms of getting more young people to think about work. As an example, over the last sort of 3 to 4 years, we've had an increase of 9 or 10% of young people having a work goal, which is great. And at the moment, we've got 57% of people aged 18 to 21 have a work goal, which is really good. But we've got to do more than just set a goal. We've got to support people on the steps to actually, getting a job. So what we do know with young people is that work experience at school is one really important thing. It's always been a bit of a grey area around the NDIS role in that. That's something that we need to sort of make clearer and work out with our state and territory partners around education and what's the NDIS role, and making sure that kids have good work experience, because that's the first exposure. That's the first time that young people get a taste of what a workplace looks like. We also know that having a job while you're at school is one of the major predictors of getting work when you leave school. So we know that, you know, that job that you have on the weekends or after school is so important, because you learn the things around, you know, hey, mate, put your phone away. You don't do that at work, you know. Don't you swear at work. That's not appropriate. No, you can't. You know, so employers are really good at training young people on what to expect from employers. And unfortunately, young people with disability, particularly those who might need that extra support to actually get a job or support at work, miss those sort of early training that those employers can give you. And so we also know that statistically, by the time someone gets to 25, it becomes really tough for them to get a job. If you can get a person in work, you know, before the age of 25, their prospects for a working life on into their continuing adulthood is much better. Another important thing I just want to highlight is in the scheme. We've heard a lot about the young people in the scheme and young people with autism. We actually know that in of the participants with autism, around 34% of the whole scheme comprised people with autism. What we also know is that 90% of the participants with autism are aged under 25. And so we've got a huge group of young people with autism that we need to make sure we set them on that trajectory to work, you know, on that pathway to work. And so we've got to start early. We've got to start while kids turn, get to working age when they're sort of 14, 15, 16. We've got to start talking to them at work. We've got to get supports in their plan to help them to experience work, to have positive work experiences, to explore work, to establish a future, what I call a future identity as a worker.
I was a young person once, Junior, not proud to believe. And yeah. I was at a special school, and I remember they put us all on a blue bus and took us down the road to the local sheltered workshop. And they got us off the bus and I said, hey, kids, have a look around. This is where you're all going to work when you finish school next year. And it was a factory where people were putting condoms into boxes and weird things that I couldn't do because I'm not that well inclined to do random work. Clearly there was this culture of, you know, low expectations around what disabled people are going to do when they finish work.
Yeah, I agree, George. I think a lot of it is by doing. So we could, you know, have lots of conversations, and parents can have conversations about working and expecting to work. But often with young people, you know, they've got to experience it. They've got to experience success while they're young, to be able to really believe, yes, I can do this. And we're seeing that culture change, I hope, indeed. And, you know, George, it's also a reflection of the times as they were then in terms of how the government funded supports. Now, I'm sure there are many people on that blue bus that could have gone straight into a job, been very independent in that job and done great, and it just wasn't even thought about. There may have been people on the blue bus that might have needed that little bit of extra support in work, and the only way they could get that was in that factory. You know, the money just wasn't available to be used anywhere else. And so this is the great change the NDIS has brought, that participants can use money in their plans to support them wherever they work. We want people to really understand how they can use their supports and find a really great provider who will support them in that goal and work really hard to get them into a job of choice. So that's a really big focus for us as well, George.
I'm so glad you did say that, because I think that's what the NDIS, when, you know, we were fighting for it, that's what we envisaged, that it wasn't about, you know, places where we went for jobs as disabled people. It's about disabled people choosing where we wanted to go and following our dreams and our passions. That's the NDIS that we envisage, and it's certainly important that we hold the NDIS to that.
Yeah, no, I think the customised employment is a really important aspect of that. And why I say that is that if you get the right job matching the right skills, then that person is going to be the most independent at work. And it's also about supporting all the people around them at work, you know, in the best way to keep that independence and building a natural supports in the workplace as well.
Yes, absolutely. Before we wrap up, Donna, any words that you'd like to say to employers who are listening?
Yes, George, I guess just in finishing, I would like to encourage all employers, whether that is in the private or the public sector, to think about jobs that you may have that would accommodate people with disability. So taking some of the earlier advice and not just looking at we've got this particular job or position description and someone with disability couldn't do that, but flipping that around to look at what parts of a job or what job do we have that we can offer. Because there are a lot of talented people with disability and certainly a lot of people who are participants of our scheme would love to have that opportunity to have a job.
Donna, can I take that a step further? Can I say that employers need to not make assumptions about what disabled people can and can't do? Because I think that that's a major barrier. So people might look at a person and think, oh, this job involves all those things that disabled people can't do. Well, the reality is that we have adjusted to our environments and found aging equipment and other things that mean that we do things and achieve the same outcomes, that we do it in different ways, yeah? And often that's not understood, so we get shut out from jobs.
That is very true, George. And assumptions can be so wrong. You know, it's taken me most of my career to get to a place where, you know, an organisation has recognised, you know, the opportunity for me to be a leader in an organisation, whereas disability has always been a barrier to get over, you know, where it's like, well, you can't possibly have a management role or a leadership role if you've got a disability. How would you do that? Whereas, you know, at being vision impaired or being blind, it doesn't prevent me from having those skills. And it's been wonderful to find an employer that recognises that.
Absolutely. Jane, any final words for NDIS participants who are thinking about employment?
Yeah, certainly, George. I'd probably keep it simple and I'll say one of the best things you can do and the first things you do is have a look at the NDIS website. There's a bit of information about employment there, but there's a particular thing called Let's Talk About Work. It's a booklet that we developed a couple of years ago that we asked people to fill out, to think about, to take to their next planning conversation about setting a work goal. It talks about what experience you've had, what's your interests, you know, what sort of work would you like to do? So it makes it really easier for a planner and LAC to have a much more in-depth conversation with you about work, setting a goal and the sort of supports you might need. So one of the best tips is go and have a look at that booklet, Let's Talk About Work, take it to your planning conversation and be really clear about, you know, I want to work, how can the NDIS help me with that? I think that's, you know, what I would encourage everyone to do. And I would particularly say if there are any younger people there or parents of younger people in school, likewise, don't be afraid to have the conversation with your LAC planner when you're sort of 15 or 16 around, okay, I'm old enough to work now. What are my first steps and how can the NDIS help me while I'm at school to make sure I'm ready to leave school and I'm with a job? So that's probably the two main things I'd like to really focus on.
Great advice. Absolutely. Thanks, Donna, and thanks, Jeannie, for your time today. And I recommend to everyone listening, check out that resource that Jeannie talked about. We'll put it on a link below. Thanks, guys. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks very much, George. It's great.
That's all we have time for on today's episode of Reasonable and Necessary. Thank you to our podcast partner for this episode, the National Disability Insurance Agency. We love your feedback, so please hit the like button and share your thoughts with us in the comment section below. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay well and reasonable.